a good part of the big book. It's all, but we're going to read some good stuff today. And I went through it, and I've gone through these pages a million times, and I saw some new stuff. So, but first, I'm going to say the set aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let me let go of all my old ideas, drop the rock all the time, so I can hear your truth. Help me carry your message today, amen. For those who don't come that often, we cover the big book, three different meetings, three different parts of the book. We have the website, experiencethebigbook.org. We have the whole book recorded, Thoughts on Recovery. You might find it useful. On Saturday, we are on working with others. I hate to admit, but it's taken us 2 years to get the page. What page are we on? Excuse me, Rod, I'm in charge. Page 93, and I think it's been good. So if you want to cover the whole big book up to page 93 and all the steps, go to Saturdays in the archive, or Saturdays, and go back to November 2017. We've covered a lot of stuff, steps we took, carry the message. Anyway, today we're on working with others, which is a chapter that I think should be studied more. It gives more information. But we have to put in perspective, this book was written in 1939. For those who are new and aren't familiar with this book was written in 1939 to show precisely how 80 people had recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. It's a textbook to the world. Here you go, here's a book. It's a textbook to the world. If anybody needs a big book, by the way, we have some. If you want to pay for it, fine. If not, it's $5, just take it. It's a message to the world on what they did, the directions to recover. And it was written in a different world. And when they worked with other people, there wasn't, they didn't come in here with the cards, or they didn't go to Valley Hope and then come here. They didn't go to detox. There were only three AA groups, and not even official, because the name came from the book. There was one in Cleveland, Akron, and New York, and probably 60 to 80 people sober at the time the book was published. They say 100, maybe 100. And yet we're here today. And so it was different when you worked with another person. And people, there were families. There wasn't the high divorce rate like there is now. People were poor in the 30s, very poor. We really didn't come out of the Depression till the Japanese attacked us. And then we had to get, really everything started rolling to produce our military, and it really helped get us back economically. But in the 30s, we were very poor. And so they would find out about the alcoholic from a family member who heard about these few people who were sober, and then they would be asked to see them. And sponsorship, when the big book was written, was you were sponsored if you took somebody to the Oxford group and you said that this is somebody that wants this program. And sponsorship in those days, you took they even paid for the hospitalization. The sponsor, they took people to the hospital if they were really in bad shape. And they had a 5-day stay, and Dr. Bob worked the steps with people in 5 days. But this is how you might want to approach a new person, how you might interact on the first visit or two, and what you should be able to do to do that, and what the person who's listening might be hearing. And so we talk about sponsorship a lot. Everybody says, get a sponsor. So you're new, you don't know what, you know you need a sponsor, everybody tells you that, but you don't know what your sponsor needs to sponsor you. And so the big book's pretty clear. You can't give away what you don't have. And they suggest that you've done the program in the book before you, so you can give that away. And we study the book because it's a timeless spiritual book. It never changes. It's written by God through human hands and minds. So we're at the bottom of 93 after all that. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. You're talking to the guy for the first time. So you're talking about spiritual principles. His religious education training may be far superior to yours. In that case, he's going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows. Now, that's the problem, what he already knows. He may not know the truth. He may have old ideas. He may have prejudice. He will be curious, and if he knew God, he wouldn't be in the situation he was in. Now, you can believe in God and pray in God, but knowledge of God and how God works in your life is the result of the steps. Remember, we have a chapter, We Agnostics, which we're going to start tomorrow, which is so powerful. Those without knowledge of God. I always believed in God. I prayed occasionally, especially if I needed something. But I never allowed God to work in my life, so I didn't have a relationship with God. So the knowledge of God that they're talking about in the big book is a relationship knowledge. And it's a relationship where you have conscious contact with your Creator, and you know He's available to you all the time and loves you all the time. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. See, faith, and a lot of people can talk about faith as belief. And you need to believe to take the second step. You have to be willing to believe that there's a power that's not you that can get you out of the crap you're in and the misery you're in and can keep you from using and drinking and keep you from the life you're living to get you some peace and serenity and some usefulness. But faith in the big book is knowledge of God and trust in God. Now, it's very important. There's a whole page on trusting God, and it has to do with living a life of alcoholism, and people have fear. Anybody get afraid? Anybody afraid today or something? And it says, fear is because we're relying on self, and we have to live on a different basis than relying on self. It says we have to rely and trust in God. And how we learn to trust in God is by working the steps. And I was thinking today, I guess it's relevant, who knows, you're going to hear it anyway, that, you know, the whole process of recovery is that we're in pain, right? So I had a really bad knee, and it interfered with the things I wanted to do. So it got bad enough, and I believed that it could be helped. That there was a power, there was someone who could help me. Now, I made a decision to get the help, but I didn't make an appointment yet. So I had decided to do it and believed that it could be done, but I hadn't taken the action. Then, being a little naive, I made the decision to go ahead and have the surgery. Now, I thought after a month, you know, I'll be tooling around and, you know, this and that. My wife says, you're out of your mind. So anyway, I decided to do it, and I took the action, and I had to go through the rehab, and it's 10 weeks later, and now the knee's okay. And I would tell somebody else, if they needed it, to go to this doctor and get it done. And I know it works, and the pain's gone. It's the same process, really, with recovery. And so it says to be vital. That means necessary for life. Faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish construction action. That's the book of James. That's faith without works is dead. It doesn't mean that you're not saved in the Christian sense or that you don't believe in God, but the faith is not changing you. It's not helping you. It's not helping anybody else. So we have to accompany it with self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. The opposite of being self-centered, right? The opposite of being selfish action. Let him see that you're not there to instruct him in religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do, but call to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, whatever he had, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. So we want a faith that works, a faith that can keep me from drinking, that'll say bad idea, a faith that'll take away my fear and my anger and judgment. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice the very precepts he knew so well. My buddy Norm's not here today, but I heard him say a long time ago, he said the big book tells us how we should be, and this book tells me how to be that. This book of spiritual principles and steps tells me how to connect with the God I believe in and allow him to work in my life and direct me and guide me and correct me. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We're dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. It says, outline the program of action. So when you're talking to someone, outline the program of action. Can you do this? Now, if you can't outline the program of action, maybe you shouldn't be sponsoring. I don't know. But maybe if you can't outline it, you should do it. Or try to go home and outline the program of action and see if you're following it. Explaining how you made a self-appraisal. Now, where do we appraise ourselves? We don't go look in the mirror and say, I need to lose weight or, you know, cut my hair. We're appraising our thinking. And we're looking at our story and our behavior in our lives so we can see the truth about it. That's steps 4 and 5, right? How you straightened out your past, 8 and 9, and why you're now endeavoring to be helpful to him, step 12. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Vital again, vitae, necessary for life. I think you can be in the program. I guess people are, and some people here, they're not sponsoring anybody. I think you're missing out on a vital part of the program, a vital part of the recovery. A lot of people say, well, I don't know where to find somebody. Anybody need a sponsor? Raise your hand. No? Everybody's shy? Nobody wants to do it? Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Look at the words. And I tell people, they say, well, why are you spending all this time with me, blah, blah, blah. I said, all I ask is that you do this and you do it with someone else and you give it away. The reason we're here today is because somebody gave it to me and somebody else gave it to them, and we're this, God works through people, and that's why the 12th step is so important, because I think just reading the big book and praying a lot at home, I don't know that that'll do it. I think you need to be with someone else and have that relationship, because the relationship with the other person eventually brings you to the relationship with God. And then you need that relationship with the other person because we're constantly wrong about everything we think, so we need somebody to tell us when we're wrong. I have a whole bunch of people I can call when I'm wrong. I just have to remember when I'm wrong to call them. Yeah. But you know, the more you do this, you know when you're wrong pretty quickly. Right? Right, it doesn't take long, does it? We know pretty quickly when we're wrong, especially at home. We won't get into that. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Isn't that the whole deal? Yeah. Isn't that the whole deal? Place the welfare of other people ahead of our own. You know? Do you always do that? Of course not. The greatest commandment was love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and might, right? But nobody does that. perfectly because we're all thinking about ourselves all the time. You can't love God and be self-centered. And so we have to work on that all the time. The program's how you can stay connected to God when you're separated and get back to Him. Make it clear that He's not under any pressure, that He needn't see you again if He doesn't want to. You should not be offended if He wants to call it off, for He has helped you more than you have helped Him. I don't think there's anybody that I tried to help that I didn't get something out of it. And then I wonder, and you don't know, even if they wave you off, that you haven't done something and that it didn't help them. They may still be sober. You may not see them. You may have planted the seed. You don't know. You don't know how you've helped people. There are people in the room who have helped so many people, they don't even realize how they've done it. If your talk has been sane, so you don't want to be screaming and yelling at them, quiet and full of human understanding, I don't tell them they're going to die anymore. I have a new thing. Drop your rock. That sounds better, doesn't it? The rock is everything you think you know that's preventing you from doing this. And maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. Maybe you've disturbed his drinking enough that he realizes that there's a solution. This is all to the good. Now here's a great line. The more hopeless he feels, the better. We want people to be hopeless when they come in here. We don't want them to be happy. We don't want them to have a plan. We want them to be without hope and desperate. And then the one thing we're supposed to do, and I hope I'm doing it today, is offer hope to the new person. There is a solution. There is a way out on which we all agree. And it's pretty simple. And it's outlined in the book, and there are people in this room that can help you. But the more hopeless he feels, the better. Now, the thing I've noticed is that I see people who are really hopeless, and I meet with them. And then a week later, they're a little less hopeless. And then the second week, they're not doing what I asked, and they're less hopeless, and then you don't see them. And then the other thing is, how does that apply to me? Well, I have to realize that I have to constantly see God every day. I'm not better than anybody else. I'm a mess. And I have to watch my thinking and watch for being separated from God and my judgment and get back on the beam. Now, the one thing I can do better is I can recognize very quickly when I'm in fear or judgment and try to stop right away, get back to God and let go of it. So I don't have to have my self-centeredness running me anymore, unless I allow it. We always have that choice. Here's a good one. I don't know if you've ever heard this. Your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning which requires discussion with other people. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you have made much progress had you not taken action. So the message is, okay, it seems, you know, you may not want to do this, but this has worked for me. And all AA asks, doesn't tell anybody to work the steps or anything. All it tells you is if you don't have a plan and your life is an effing mess and you can't quit using or drinking, try this and let us know. And that's what the birthdays are all about. And try this plan and let us know. What is your experience having had, what is your result of the steps? And then share it with someone else. On your first visit, tell them about the Fellowship of AA. And the Fellowship of AA was different in 1939 than it is today. It was the Fellowship of the Spirit. That's what they wrote on page 164. It was a small group of people who were seeking God together. They were practicing quiet time. They were reading spiritual matters. They were trying to connect with God. And if he shows interest, lend him your copy of the book. Why? Because the book is a textbook of recovery, taking what was in their minds and putting it in paper so you could do what they did. And you don't have to follow it, you don't have to like it or read it, but it is a textbook. And textbooks are where somebody has written something from their mind, put it on paper, of what they have. And then you can either do it or not. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. So you spend a lot of time the first visit. Give him a chance to think it over. That's always dangerous. Let alcoholics think it over, but he has to be the one. Listen to what it says. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he's likely to say you rushed him. I'm always trying to get people through the step into the step four quickly, but I realize that sometimes they haven't really taken step one. And you know how I realize that? Because they're fighting step four. And so each person has a pattern. There's no right or wrong on how to do it. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. It's hard not to be passionate about something that saved your life, though. It's hard not to feel passionate about it. And if you're not at least passionate about it, the other person won't sense your enthusiasm. But you don't want to drive them crazy. Now here's one. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. We all have to remember that. We're all the same. We're all alcoholics. We're all powerless. We're all self-centered. But simply lay out the kid as spiritual tools for his inspection. So it's good to talk about the book and the program rather than lecturing about God or something. Show them how they work for you. Can you do this? Can you? Because that's what the book does. Show him, offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. But you don't carry the alcoholics. And now they're going to talk about things you shouldn't do. If he is not interested in your solution, see, if he expects you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. So you're all willing to help him, but you're not going to be his banker or his, when they get into self-pity, you're not going to be there to tell him how bad things are. And this may be due after he gets hurt some more. Remember, pain is the key. It produces willingness, which is the result of humility. So you need pain, humility, and then willingness. We don't talk about humility enough. We talk about willingness a lot. But what makes me willing is when I'm humbled. If he is sincerely interested and wants to see you again, a lot of them don't, ask him to read the book in the interval. Now look at this. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. That's the thing. Sometimes I want them to go on more than they do. And so then I drive myself crazy. He should not be pushed or prodded, because look at these lines. By you, his wife, or his friends, here's the key line. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. I can't give anybody the desire. But I can tell you when I see it in someone. You can tell it when you're meeting someone. You can see it. They really have this desire. And then what you want is to hope that that desire stays alive in them. Because remember, the ego rebuilds quickly. And that's when you have to try to connect quickly with them when they have that desire and start the work together. But I can't give anyone desire. But that, if you're going to find God, it says God can and will if he is sought, right? But you have to decide if you're going to seek God. And remember, they warn you, half-seeking won't do any good. and it absolutely won't do any good unless you absolutely let go of all your old ideas. So how do you know if you've absolutely let go of all your old ideas? Well, it's hard, because your old ideas are your old ideas, but you see how they're wrong. And the steps are actually, step four is how you learn how to let go of your old ideas. You see your resentments, your fears, your harmful conduct. It's a process. I see old ideas all the time that I have to let go of. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. Now, here's a problem with that. if I have conscious separation from God, then my own conscious is not connected to God. So what they mean here is to try to follow the consciousness of God within all of us. But sometimes that's hard because you don't know. You, with your mind, you can't think your way out of this. We have no monopoly on God. Everybody agree with that? We merely have an approach that worked for us, and it's an approach to God. That's why we try not to discuss, somebody just died. We try not to discuss our religion, but rather discuss our relationship with God. Does this make sense? And then some people may want to know you're religious. That's okay if they ask you. Point out that as alcoholics, we have much in common, that you would like in any case to be friendly. Let it go at that. Here's a great one. This was read by Joe and Charlie when they told somebody that the sex inventory was on page 69. They tell this joke. So the person went to page 96 to read about sex, and it says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic, try again. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. Now, first time I heard it, I thought it was pretty funny. So anyway, but this is true. Do not be discouraged, and I have to remember this, if they don't respond at once. Search out another person and try again. Don't waste time on people who don't want it. That's the key thing. And sometimes people want to do it just enough to keep the pressure off at home, or just to make themselves feel like they're doing something, and they're just screwing around. And sometimes you have to say, listen, you didn't call me every day. You're not showing up before the meetings. You show up once a month. You don't think we're going to work the steps together. That's not how it works. So you just have to set boundaries yourself. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. They have to be desperate and they have to be eager. Eager is a good word. And so I like this. Desperation produces eagerness. And when you see somebody who's really eager, it's so exciting. And you can see that they have the desire to seek God within. You see how much is in this these two pages we read? We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man or woman who could not or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. Remember pain. My sponsor, Cliff, would hear somebody talk and he'd go, buy him more booze. What did he mean? He wasn't a mean guy. He was very loving. But if people aren't defeated, they're not defeated. Let them drink some more. Their life, their unmanageable life will eventually produce enough pain to make them desperate, eager. But unfortunately, we have a fatal disease, and a lot of people never get that point. They never get up. They're never defeated. He may be convinced that he cannot recover by himself. Isn't that the beginning of step one? Isn't that the asking for help, saying, God, help me? To spend too much time on any situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. So that's what we're trying to offer people. We're not really offering them, you need to do this and write this notebook and do all that. What we're offering you is to be able to have a happy and joyous life. We don't want to focus too much on the process itself, even though we talk about working the steps. We want to talk about the results of the steps and what happens as a result of them and the changes in your life. We don't want to feel like they have to go to school or go to Marine training camp, but there's going to be actions that they're going to have to take. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. I'm going to stop there. I think this is great stuff. Next time, we're going to look at the second visit and what happens. And we're going to talk about the Good Samaritan. Is it okay if I talk next week a little bit about the Good Samaritan? Yes. Anybody object to some religious reference? Well, if you do, don't show up. All right, thanks everybody. Yeah.